Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, everybody. Happy Friday. Coming in with one of our first or second off-season talks, if you include the one right after the game on Sunday. Off-season Pirates baseball chat. Andrew Destin here, of course, with Jason Mackey here with you with your Post-Gazette baseball chat. And as always, we're brought to you by the North Shore Tavern. If you love baseball, you'll love the North Shore Tavern. Your interior is wall-to-wall Pirates. There's appetizers, entrees, cocktails, and of course, steak and seafood on a sizzling lava stone. Open every day, the North Shore Tavern across from PNC Park is Pittsburgh's home for steak on stone. Well, Jason, as we've kind of wrapped here with the season ending and me kind of transitioning over to Penguins, I was not there on Tuesday for General Manager Ben Cherington's kind of State of the Union address, whatever you want to call it, with members of the media Tuesday. You were there. I know there's tons to get into, but let's just kind of go with, you know, general takeaways. Where do you want to start with talking about what Cherington had to talk about, I suppose?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. And it's, I don't want to say it's what I expected Ben to say, but it's kind of what I expected Ben to say. You know, I wrote for yesterday, I think it was, or 2 days ago, for people watching this, the general theme was kind of like, we're satisfied. We feel like there's progress, or maybe, you know, happy, but not satisfied might be a better way to say it. You know, there's a lot to look back on 2023 and I think feel good about. And I think the Pirates winning 76 games surpassed most people's expectations to do it without O'Neill Cruz, Brubaker, Burrows, mostly without Velasquez. I think you got some underwhelming performances around the field. But you win 76 games, that's not nothing in the scheme of this thing. And you go from 62 and 100 to 76 and 86. But I think the theme of what Ben said, and I think what is an interesting conversation topic with the Pirates right now, is the next 14 games or whatever. You know, the 14, it's almost like, you know, losing weight, right? Like the beginning pounds come off a lot easier than you get closer to actually being in pretty good shape. And so, I mean, that's the way I look at the Pirates, where great, 14 games, but like, how are we going to get from 76 wins to 86 wins? 90 might be asking a bit much, but, you know, I think you can reasonably look at the Pirates and say the Marlins or somebody like that and say, you know what, we're not that far off. Really, like A and B are fairly close, but what needs to happen to get from A to B? And that formed some of the conversation. To me, that sort of fell underneath the umbrella of the Pirates finding a way to, you know, win 10 more games, 12 more games, 14 more games in 2024.
Yeah, it's a lot to unwrap there in terms of how you go about doing that. But I guess my first question would be, just based on what Cherington was saying, and I guess based on your personal opinions, is how exactly does that next step happen? Like, where, how do you go about doing that? Is that primarily from an internal standpoint? Is that what we've kind of discussed on previous shows of the external factors of going outside the system? Like, what's kind of in your mind, and I guess from what you could garnish or what you could gather rather from Cherington, like, what is their opinion on how do you take that next step?
Yeah, and this frustrates me because there's no better way to say it. Like, I don't even blame Ben for this. I mean, it has to be everything, right? Like, that sounds like a cop out, but it's true. There has to be internal improvement. There has to be external additions. There has to be unique ways of finding players. You know, I'd love to sit here and be talking about the premium free agents that the Pirates were going to sign, and that's just not going to happen. And we all know that, and that's okay. But if I look at their team, and Cherington has used this analogy before, and I kind of steal it. I think it's a good one. Of various knobs you can turn, you know, and you think of the Pirates like that. And there are a lot of there's a lot of room to turn knobs and improve things. And, you know, I think you can look at their team right now and say they need starting pitching. Charrington talked on Tuesday about having 10, which great. I mean, I want them to have 10. That's fantastic. But they're so far from that. I don't see how they can go into spring training with anything close to that. So, okay, you start with Oviedo and Keller, and then you add in what? Priester, Ortiz, Rowanzi. I don't know if I'm feeling great about any of that stuff, man. You know, are we assuming Jared Jones is going to make a lightning fast transition to the major leagues? Like, you have to add, right? You have to. And first base, I think you can maybe argue it could be a little bit of add, a little bit of internal improvement. I think we saw internal improvement this year to hit on the 2023 stuff with like Jack Sawinski, Key Brian Hayes. Great. That's fantastic. And, you know, you add them to Brian Reynolds and some of the variables then, like the health of O'Neill Cruz is going to matter a great deal at shortstop. The evolution of Henry Davis or somebody else in right field is going to matter a great deal. You see the question at the bottom of our screen, who's your opening day second baseman in 2024? To me, that's like the golden goose here. I don't think there's any knob greater, you know, that you can turn in terms of internal improvement. I don't know who it is. I'd be curious to see what listeners and viewers think who your opening day second baseman is. And Andrew, I'll kick it back to you on this. Who's your opening day second baseman in 2024?
Well, so I'll start with my answer point blank, Leover Peguero.
Okay.
But I'll also preface with saying, talk about the difference 12 months can make. Because what we were talking about in 2023 in spring training was, is it going to be G1 Bay? Is it going to be Rodolfo Castro? Is it going to be Tuca Pietermarcano? Like, this conversation has changed greatly to me that it's now, you know, there's obviously other factors there, right? O'Neill Cruz's health is paramount to this, because if he's not ready to go at shortstop, or if he can only DH or play elsewhere, then maybe that means Peguero has to play short. And then that really opens up the window of opportunity for Nick Gonzalez. But I'm operating under the belief that, you know, give it 6 months, Cruz will be good to play short. You're playing Peguero more often at second, and he can play an adequate short, but, you know, he's better suited to second base. And Nick might be more of your utility guy who's moving around the infield and gets a little bit of time in the outfield too. But that's just kind of how I see things shaking up. How about you?
Yeah, I'm basically there with you. But and I'm grabbing my notebook here because I've been doing a series of stories. I don't know if anybody has read these. If you haven't, check them out. Shameless self-promotion, but sort of an analysis. Yesterday, I looked at the outfield. Today, this morning, I just filed one on the infield. Just some statistical things, stuff we've learned, questions for next season, stuff to chew on as we sort of unpack this season and transition into the off season. But, you know, so looking at some of this stuff, Andrew, and it wasn't pretty. G1 Bay defensively was not very good. 7 errors in 465 and a third innings at second base, tied for most on the team among anybody. I want to believe there's something there. I do. I don't know if I truly feel that way. Bay did not finish the season terribly strong. I think there's some signs in there. I mean, I love the speed, but I don't know where he fits. Leover Peguero at the same time, September 3rd, he was hitting .274 with a 784 OPS. I'll take those numbers all day long from Peggy. I like the defense over there. No errors in 33 games. Was very good. Then went in the tank. 185, 461 OPS over his last 22. Struck out a bunch, basically disappeared. So I want to believe there was a period there where I was like, okay, he's the opening day second baseman in 2024. That's great. Him and O'Neill Cruz, you know, but I don't know. You know, Nick Gonzalez tore it up at AAA. If Nick Gonzalez comes back in spring training and is really good and earns that job, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. I guess if G1 Bay figured it out and earned that job, I'm not sure I'd be the least bit surprised. But at this point, Jared Triolo. I mean, I don't know if I want him every day at second base. I like bouncing him around. I think that's a valuable asset for the Pirates. But somebody's going to have to step up and take that second base job next year. I mean, I guess conceivably they could go out on the market and add. But yeah, it's a weird situation with them over there. I mean, they tried 8 guys this year. 8 guys at second base, and they were still among the worst teams offensively at second base production. It's got to be better. I just don't know who it's going to be.
I can't believe Mark Mathias wasn't the answer. That's where I'm at. I was convinced.
Is he in the playoffs?
He was in the Giants system for a little bit after he went to Seattle and the Giants got him, and then he went down to AAA. So no playoffs for Mr. Mathias.
Okay. By the way, have we ever made the comparison that Mark Mathias looks like Mike DeFabo?
I believe so, and it is kind of terrifying. It's like face-to-face. It's everything, man.
Every time I look at Mathias's MLB.com player page, I think it's Mike DeFabo staring back at me. It's very strange.
Mike
DeFabo, former Penguins writer, now with The Athletic, and good friend of the show, of course. We love Mike, but... So let's get to the bottom of this real quick, because my man had a journey this season.
Please.
So started out with the Texas Rangers, right? Gets traded to the Pirates in March. Up and down with the Pirates, up and down with the Pirates. Then gets DFA'd in June. The Mariners claim him July 2nd. Guess doesn't go up down there. Ends up getting traded July 31st to the Giants. Goes up down there. Oh, boy. And then ends up on the 60-day injured list with a right shoulder strain. So, yeah, that's a season for you.
Yeah. That trade was one of Giants fans' love. AJ Pollock and Mark Mathias instead of Shohei Ohtani. I mean, I thought it was a good consolation prize.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Oh, yeah, Mark Mathias, Shohei Ohtani. I mean, that's like, what? Yeah, it's only 9 WAR difference. I mean, not even 10.
Yeah, what are we talking about? But yeah. But with second base, just to get back to that discussion real quick, which Peguero, you mentioned a lot of the things that I'm frankly a little bit concerned about with his game, is that what we saw in September is all the talk with him at the beginning of the year when he was in the minors and a little bit of last year too was like how pitch selection needed to improve with him and was improving.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but speaking for myself, I worry about that. I don't know that it's at a place that's consistent for an everyday big leaguer. It's a guy who was struggling to get on base, you know, 30% of the time. This was a sub-300 OBP guy. So, like, that to me is where my fear goes. I know you can say about a lot of the guys in the lineup, but with him specifically, and I guess you can say it with Bay as well, because I think Gonzalez does have probably the best approach of the three, at least in terms of how he handles at-bats. But with Peguero, that's something that to me is just kind of a little concerning. It's just getting to the box, kind of swinging at a lot of stuff, a lot of chase, a lot of outside the zone. Those are things does that really improve at the big league level? I don't know. That's the question.
Yeah, but you know what? The thing I like about Peguero over Gonzalez is he has done it at the big league level. He has done it. Nick has had great numbers at AAA. He had a great spring. By and large, have we seen that translate to the major leagues? It was a short sample. It was a way too short sample. And that's one thing that I didn't quite understand what the Pirates did with Nick Gonzalez and Miguel Andujar in September. It almost felt like they played their kids or their like projects, the guys they're evaluating the last day of the season. And like, I think Shelty was on the radio show saying that they had to get another look at guys. No, you didn't. You could have had a look at them in August. You didn't have to get a look in the final day of the regular season while fans are showing up for Fan Appreciation Day, hoping to see Key Brian Hayes and Brian Reynolds. You didn't have to do that day.
Nope.
They waited. They waited. And then we're going into the offseason. I still feel like without a very good sample size on what Andujar is, on what Gonzalez is, I don't know. And to be fair, like, I don't know if 2 more weeks would tell me either. So I get that aspect of it. It's just, you know, sooner or later, I think Gonzalez has to get some of that AAA production to translate to the major leagues. I will understand and go with them that it doesn't always happen the first time. Anybody who, you know, wants to call me like a shill for the organization or something like that, I mean, just look at Jared Triolo, right? Like, it wasn't great. He goes down, he fixes some things, comes back up, does really well. Look at Mitch Keller, for instance. You know, he had some really rough years and figures it out. Like, development is not always linear. So, like, I understand. But at the same time, you've got to put out a major league team next year that has more production at second base than you had this past year. So we're just looking at some of these candidates, man. And it's interesting to say the least. I don't know who it ends up being. What about first base if we shift it there? Ooh. Do you feel any better about that?
Like where they're at State of the Union of just like the depth there, or how do you mean?
Yeah. Who plays there? Who plays there? If you have to go internal improvement, right? Because I doubt they're going to sign Rhys Hoskins. I doubt that that's going to be they're just going to have some magic. Not that he would be a magic elixir either, but sure. You're going to have to, the theme of this show here is what internal improvements are available to the Pirates. What internal improvements are available to the Pirates at first base?
Right now it's Trujillo's your guy, I think. And you move him around. He's probably getting 3 starts a week there. Maybe 4.
Really?
You could do that and then go Connor Joe a couple of starts a week. I think that's probably the best. I don't know how else I'd handle it if you're just going internally. I mean, Malcolm Nunez hasn't shown me enough.
Okay. Sorry. Maybe I didn't preface that. Would you make an ad there? Or would you try to stay internal? Yeah.
Yeah, I'd definitely make an ad. At least supplement it. If it's that Santana type, if it's a veteran guy who's coming for a few mil, like it doesn't need to be a world beater. It doesn't need to be a guy who's OPS in more than whatever, 720, 730, guy who can be a part-time guy. But like, you got to supplement it a little bit, but I don't know that it needs to be that everyday guy. We've talked about it a bunch. Santana feels like a logical choice to just go back to him, right?
I agree with you. After going through the infield sort of postscript, whatever you want to call it, I'm weakening a little bit. I am. I was looking up their offensive numbers with Santana and without Santana. Not only was there like not a discernible difference, they went the other direction.
Yeah.
They were better offensively without him. They were clearly better as a team over the final 2.5 months. I mean, some of that included Santana, not much. But I mean, is it the worst thing in the world to turn things over to Connor Joe and Jared Triolo? I mean, I probably shouldn't say that because then if they do that, the Pirates are going to, or some fans going to be like, well, Mackey talked them into it or something. I don't know. You just get blamed for stuff if you don't advocate for them to go out and get somebody, which I think I still would, but I feel less of a sense of urgency, Andrew, after seeing that. Like they had with Santana, they had a 735 OPS, which was 15th in the major leagues. Without Santana, they had a 776 OPS, tied for 12th in the major leagues. And that playing time obviously got turned over to Connor Joe and Triolo, primarily. I mean, I don't really see a need to have Alfonso Rivas on the team. That seems redundant. But if you're telling me it's Joe and Triolo, which doesn't really make sense, 2 righty hitters, maybe you play the hot bat. Maybe somebody goes out to the outfield. I don't understand. And I like Santana. I think he'd make a big difference in that clubhouse. But, I've already heard this pushback, and it's a legitimate one. It's like, well, they didn't really win that much when Santana was here. So, like, what's he really solving? What sort of fires is he putting out? Yeah, I guess I get that, but yeah. I don't know.
It's valid. I mean, the double right-handed bat thing is just – that's the only concerning element. To me, this should be so seamless if Connor Joe batted lefty, right?
Like, there's your offseason project. Forget the touching at first base. I should have written a column about Connor Joe needs to learn how to hit left-handed.
Right, we fixed it. There's your answer. But, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess you could go to it with a idea of, okay, you give Triolo, like, let's say you stay internal. You give Triolo 3 starts a week at first.
Yeah.
Move him to third once a week for Keys off day. And you give him, like, another start at second or another start in the outfield. That gets you 5 starts a week from Triolo. And then Joe can stay in that kind of part-time role of, you give him the other 3 starts a week at first and then like gets a spot start in the outfield. It's not impossible, but you're just not playing the odds in terms of the numbers of like, hey, what if it's a right-handed arm on there 5 out of 6 nights of the week? Like, well, you're going with a right-handed option at first base every night.
Right. I was going to say, I mean, that's exactly what you're saying, but like, I just wish one of them hit left-handed.
Yep, that's it. That's the answer.
If you had a lefty option at first base, you'd be fine. And I'm now racking my brain to think about like lefty options. Malcolm Nunez is somebody I still think about, but I believe he hits right-handed.
That is correct.
Unless I'm missing that he became a switch hitter somewhere. I don't think I am, but let me just double check that. Now he bats solely right-handed. You just need it. You need a left-handed bat in that spot. I mean, Santana would solve that.
Yeah. I was going to say Aaron Shackelford. There's your answer.
Aaron Shackelford. There's an off-the-board pick. There's a very off-the-board pick. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I was thinking about some other guys too, like Trey Mancini's out there for first base, if they would address it in a non-traditional way. But like, there's another righty bat. Yep. And are we really improving anything? I don't know if we are. Who's the best available left-handed bat who plays first base? Do you know?
Oh, that's a phenomenal question. Let's go on the Google machine.
Yeah. I mean, Eric Hosmer would be an available option. Would probably come cheap because I believe he's still getting paid by, was it the Padres?
Yeah.
I want to say he's one of the guys with you know, still somewhat under contract. Yeah, I mean, I still come back to Santana. It's like, you're going to have to pay something for Hosmer. You're going to have to pay something for Santana too. And I do think whether it was borne out in a half season of OPS or whether it was borne out in a half season of results, you and I were in that clubhouse. And I know this is the kind of thing that is hard to quantify, but I think there would be a lot of people very happy if it came out that the Pirates were bringing back Carlos Santana. One of them being the gigantic shortstop. And yep. That might be the sole reason to do it. It just might, you know, and I, along with everybody else, sometimes forget how long and excruciating a baseball season can be. And in the middle of a bunch of crap, which obviously was not all of Carlos Santana's fault. He was one of the very important, steady figures with some semblance of perspective. You know, you don't expect the guy just to like snap everybody around him out of a giant funk. But I think it's helpful to have guys like that in there. I do. And I've been in a lot of these clubhouses for the Pirates where they didn't have anything close. They had guys that haven't been through this before. And, you know, I don't think we can turn our backs on that element just, you know, because you say, oh, well, they were better without him than they were with him. Like, that doesn't mean he's not a good player. That doesn't mean he's not well-respected. It doesn't mean he doesn't have anything to add, pardon the double negative. Like, I still come back to, I think it's just tough to find that improvement internally, and you'll have to look somewhere else to get it, even if it's as simple as talking like lefty, you know, lefty, righty, righty, lefty, that sort of deal.
Yeah, it's supremely difficult to quantify, right, is what that kind of impact is. But, I mean, yeah, we saw it on a pretty regular basis for a good chunk of 3-4 months there. It's like dating back to spring training. You know, obviously he's not here anymore, but like Rodolfo Castro was another guy that Santana was pretty keen on, you know, taking kind of a mentoring role for. You know, obviously it's a moot point now, but like, yeah, I mean, that stuff had value. You know, if I'm comparing Carlos Santana, this is by no fault of these guys, but like, let's say we go into the offseason, and I just pulled up a couple of names here for first baseman. I'll kind of run through them rapid fire to you of left-handed batting first baseman who could be available, who could be of interest. Like, if it's him, if it's Santana versus Joey Gallo, who am I choosing? I'm probably going Santana. Where are you at?
Same. 100 times over.
Okay. Santana versus Brandon Belt.
Depends on the number, but probably Santana.
Probably Santana. Belt commanded like 10 mil this year, despite, you know, coming off a down season.
I mean, the offense is there, but there's no defense.
Nope, not anymore. Matt Carpenter, if you wanted to make him, right? Ooh. Like, these are the left-handed options, unless Max Muncy, for whatever reason, opts out of his player deal.
Could be an option.
He could be. $16 million for the player option. I got to believe he probably takes that, or if not, he'll probably command something more than that.
But if he knows he has an opportunity to play for the Pirates, maybe that changes things.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
I'd get in early on that one.
Yeah, that, I mean, who I mean, needs
if they also add Max Muncy and Ohtani this offseason, I like the chances.
Are they not? I thought that was set in stone.
Oh, man. We can dream, right? We can dream.
We can dream, and the Pirates can sign Josh Bell. There it is. It's settled.
Watch, the Pirates will end up signing an Ohtani. There's like a Yusei Ohtani or something out there. It's like in Major League, you know, sign Tanaka. Like, not those Giants.
No. Okay. Oh, good.
So what? We've talked a lot about the infield. What about the outfield? I mean, as you look at, like, you know, the dials or mechanisms or avenues or whatever cliche you want to use for internal improvement, where do you go? What can get better?
I think it probably starts with the guys who are on the major league roster. And that's, I say that just because I don't look at AAA and say there's an abundance of options there.
Right.
I don't look there and say this is the answer. And I probably don't feel that way about AA either. I mean, I like Matt Gorski. I like his game. I like that he's an athletic guy who can play center, who hits for power. I've had a lot of doubts if that translates to the big league level. So yeah. My attention goes to the guys in the bigs. And I don't know. This is where my mind goes. I feel like Josh Palacios is a big part of this. He's a guy who showed the potential at the plate that he can hit for power, that he can come through in clutch situations, which I know that, you know, those are factors outside of control of, like, how do you quantify clutch. But I say all that to say that this is a guy that never really had an extended run in the big leagues. And when he finally got one with the Pirates, showed that he's capable. He can be a league average player. And I feel like if you give a guy like that, who is a hard worker, is an athletic guy who has an attention to detail, you give him more time in the bigs, he can only get better, right? So he's somebody that I look to for an internal improvement. The last few weeks of Sawinski being able to hit left-handed hitting, the consistency from Brian Reynolds. And of course, what do you see Henry Davis continuing to improve in right field if that's what ends up being the case? I know there's the talk about him getting more time at catcher this offseason and that being the focus, but, like, come on, I'm focused on Henry, the right fielder.
Yeah, I worry about that, Andrew. Sorry, we might go on a detour here, but
we might.
I worry if that's the right move with Henry. I really do. Like, I'm just going to be a little crass here. He stinks at two positions, theoretically. I don't think that's permanent. I think he can get really good. And I like Henry, and I like his work ethic and his focus, and I think the world of him as a person. But, like, if they're telling me his defense isn't good behind the plate, I've seen his defense in right field and it's not good. To me, the best thing you can do is pick one. Pick one or the other. To me, the most linear path is right field. If I was running this, I would say, Henry, I need you to be the best right fielder you can possibly be. I think if he's not, like, if he gets the spring training and feels decently confident in his outfield work, at least feels like it's passable, you can concentrate on the bat, you know, and just be a normal hitter, be a right fielder, be out there 145, 150 games a year, and just, like, commit. That's my right fielder. Endy's my catcher. Endy, I want you to get as good as you can behind the plate. Henry, get as good as you can in right field. I've also got Jason DeLay, who, oh, by the way, was not terrible and is perfectly fine in a backup catcher role. You know, I realized there was this idea that they could, you know, have two catchers and one goes out here and one goes out there and they're maximizing the roster and all this stuff. It really hasn't worked out that way. And now I want to look at this and say, how do I get the best out of what I have? And to me, again, internal improvement dial, it's to get Henry Davis better usable in right field. It's not to have him be the best catcher he can be. Andy Rodriguez, by and large, was fine catching. But it requires you to sort of punt on that idea. So that's where my head goes. But I wanted to loop back to the Palacios thing, too, because I think you brought up a really good point with why can't guys get better? Joshua Palacios is a perfect example of that. You know, his first 2 years he played, I was looking this up as you were talking, I think 42 games, largely did nothing. Had two doubles, no triples, no homers, six RBIs. This year played 91 games, hit 239, 692 OPS. And you go, oh, yeah, whatever. It's not that big a deal. 10 home runs, 46 RBIs, a bunch of clutch moments. Man, if you look year over year, like that level of improvement, that's impressive. He's a zero maintenance guy, terrific personality, functions great off the bench. I don't want them to lose Palacios. I think it makes a lot of sense that what he can do for them and how he functions in big moments and his personality and being loose. And I want to see what that improvement looks like, you know, based on 2022 to 2023, how it looks 2023 to 2024. I just do. And I think you need to, at some point, probably make some hard roster decisions with Palacios, with Connor Joe, with Miguel Andujar, and maybe they've made the one with Andujar. But I see internal improvement coming from Palacios. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, and you hit on so many of the key points there with him. And it's
by the way, 317 over his last 29. I mean, that's not an insignificant sample size, 851 OPS. Like, that is an improvement inside of a season. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, like, that matters. That was actually a point I was going to make. Tip of the cap on that one. The surge he had down the stretch there, Westminster College boy, but,
hey, I'm getting ready for Saturday, brother.
Yeah, we haven't talked
ready
about
for
that.
Saturday. I need to talk about this. I'm making my return to Titan Radio to call the football game on Saturday, and I've got like flashcards out to memorize numbers. I'm going through game notes and research and, you know, learning about the team and catching myself up. So I'm taking this gig seriously, and I'm so darn excited. You are required to listen to that 1 o'clock on Saturday, my friend.
If you think I mean 100%, that is on the planner, which we've talked about. We've talked about the planner, but it's on the planner because I will be driving back from Buffalo after covering the preseason game tomorrow.
Okay.
So that will be my afternoon drive. That's what we'll be listening in on.
Okay. Good. Good.
But with Palacios, it's like, yeah, I mean, the hitting stuff is such a big key improvement with him. I look at also with defensively, right? Like that's something that was kind of bogging him down a little bit. This is by no means anything against him, but just defensively was not a guy that you put out there and said this was an improvement over a Sawinski or over a Reynolds, right? Like this is a guy who struggled a little bit defensively as well at times. You know, made a couple of nice catches, but maybe those looked a little harder than they really were because of the routes, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
From talking with him at the end of the season at that last series against Miami, like he was like, yeah, a big thing that me and the team are on the same page about is like, got to be able to play all three outfield spots and get better at that. Like, so for me, that's something I look at with Palacios is, you know, he's part of this. I think I'm right there with you. I think he's a key portion of this. Got to get better defensively too. Like the hitting, the improvement there is significant, but if you're going to be a fourth outfielder, a guy who's coming off the bench, sporadic playing time, feel like it would probably benefit the Pirates cause if that was somebody who was a plus defender versus a negative, right?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I completely agree with a lot of this idea, frankly, Andrew. I mean, I think it's important just to take this a different direction and then we'll wrap. Mm-hmm. But it's important that stuff like this happens, whether it's Palacios, whether it's Peguero, whether it's Bay, whether it's Nick Gonzalez, Triolo. You know, like this stuff is cheap. You want to be able to save money here so you can spend it other places where you clearly need to. In pitching, and we've spent a lot of time in past episodes talking about the need to add to the pitching staff and free agency, and that should be a big thing. And I completely agree with all of that. And I want to see them go heavy on pitching this year. I think they need it. They need something to get them to midseason when they're going to get reinforcements. They need something, period, because they just don't have enough. But if there's avenues to get stuff on the cheap, what you already have, internal improvement, and we've seen some of it, I also think there's a lot of it available for next year, whether it's Palacios, whether it's Davis. And so, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how much that comes out. I think that's a big factor in, you know, determining if they win more games next season. I mean, we could keep going with this topic, really. Like defensively, they were kind of middle of the pack. I think they can and should be better than they were for a variety of reasons, but yeah, I mean, it's non-negotiable, right? It just has to happen if you're going to conduct themselves business, you know, like the way they are business wise. Some of it because of the economics of baseball, whatever. You have to do it.
Yeah, a lot that's non-negotiable, but I think something you and I are on the same page about, and I know we've talked about a bunch, is that what's non-negotiable is probably building up the pitching depth. A lot of this stuff we're talking about, the internal improvement, it's all really important. But first and foremost, I feel like, you know, just to kind of wrap up my thoughts about this conversation at large, is that if there's money to be spent and it's got to be first base, if it's got to be somewhere else, if it's got to be at the pitching, priorities are starting pitching and let these natural developments that you're kind of banking on, let them transpire. But you got to build up the pitching depth a little bit.
Yep. No doubt. We also have to listen to Westminster Titan football on Saturday afternoon.
Absolutely. At 1 o'clock.
Yes.
Okay. I'm locked
Westminster in. Bethany homecoming. Let's go.
We're so ready. Keep working the flashcards.
You're going to Buffalo.
Yeah.
What's your wing spot in Buffalo?
I've only been to Buffalo one time, and it was just in passing. So if you have a good wing spot, if I'm going to the Anchor Bar, is that too touristy? Like, what's the play here?
No, I mean, the Anchor Bar is good. Duff's is I'd probably send you to Duff's. Where are you staying?
Near the airport.
Near the airport. Okay. Yeah, there's... I think there's a Duff's pretty close to there. I know there's an Anchor Bar close. There's a Duff's in Amherst that I usually go to. Check that out. Bocce Club Pizza is tremendous. Buffalo, by the way, is one of my like sneaky. I love Buffalo. I miss it from hockey. I could go there. I miss the heck out of that trip. Bocce Club Pizza. Joe Starkey used to work there. Duff's and Gabriel's Gate is a wing place. Jim Rutherford always used to talk about Gabriel's Gate, and I never went there, but I heard it's good.
Man, I got all sorts of lists. This is great. I need this because the problem is, so quick side story before we wrap up. I've only been to Buffalo one time, and it was because when I was interning here at the PG in the summer of 21, it was when the Blue Jays were playing their home games in Buffalo.
Okay.
And I made a point of going up there for a day trip just to catch one of the Blue Jays games, but I had to race back. It was like a day game on a Sunday, so the game was 1 o'clock, finished up at like 4, and I had to race back for some assignment at like 8 o'clock for the PG. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head what it was. All that I remembered was watching the Orioles smack the Blue Jays, but so I didn't even get to enjoy the city. So I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you enjoy yourself, and take us out of here. See everybody next week.
Yeah, we'll catch you all next time. We'll check in with you each next week, and keep following along with all our great content on post-gazette.com on Pirates baseball and all things Pittsburgh sports, and we will catch you all soon.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post Gazette Sports. If you enjoyed the video, please like it and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Check out our Apple Podcast channel for more podcast content. Click below for a special deal of 99 cents for a 3-month subscription to the Pittsburgh Post Gazette.